This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thank you for downloading this programme from BBC Radio 4. For more information, visit bbc.co.uk/radio4.
The Living World this week has come to Cumbria in search of char. And whilst I make a very good cup of tea here, this has got nothing at all to do with tea, nor am I looking for somebody to do the housework. If I tell you our garden guest this morning is Ian Winfield from the Centre for Ecology and Hydrology at Lancaster, and he's a fish ecologist, they might, Ian, guess what we're all about. We're here in search of the Arctic char.
That's right. We're in search of one of the United Kingdom's rarest freshwater fish. And within England, it's something of a speciality of just the Lake District here.
We stand on a quay at the side of Windermere on a cracking winter's morning. I mean, you couldn't have arranged it better, could
yes,
you?
Yes, no, it is perfect. There's very little wind. There's a smattering of snow upon the hills. No mist, so I think we're in for a nice run out today.
We join you on one of your research trips, so we're mob-handed. Just introduce us to the others that are with us.
Yep, down by the boat there is Janice Fletcher. She's the most experienced of the group here with the Arctic char sampling today. And then Ben just coming down from our right. Ben will be driving us today. And between them, they actually do the routine sampling, which they do over a sort of a six-week period at this time of year.
Right. Now, it all sounds very easy, but Windermere, as many people will know, is the largest freshwater lake in England. How on earth do you find them?
Well, we use several different techniques. For regular monitoring, what we do now is use echo sounding or hydroacoustics, in which we search for the fish much as the way as naval people used to search for submarines, sending out pulses of sound. But what we're doing today is some sampling which first started way before hydroacoustics were common on fresh waters. And this is using a kind of net, a gill net, which we set previously. It's in the lake at the moment. So we'll go to it and lift it out and hopefully see an Arctic char on one of their spawning grounds.
Fishing occasions on the Living World usually involve a very wet boat, but I'm delighted to say we stand next to this lovely aluminium, very large looking research boat. A beautiful piece of kit.
It is, yes. We've only had this a few years. It's very nice. It's very comfortable.
We've had our health and safety briefing. We've
yes,
got all the right sort of gear on.
Life
belts and things like that. Get aboard. It's a large step down into the boat. So
it is, yeah. But I just watch because things will be a little bit slippy. So
do you mind if I go first?
Hold on to that on your right.
Okay. Right, we're on. Now just left the shelter of the dock out onto Windermere itself. We're on the... We're about the middle of Windermere.
We are, just about in the middle. Just come out from the west shore of the lake. The lake is very long and thin. It's about 12 miles long, not a mile wide really. And it's made up of two basins. So if you look at a map of Windermere, you can see during the middle part here, there's a few islands. Bell Island, we're just about to pass. It's relatively shallow here. So the form of the lake is such that it's made of these two big deep pots joined together by this relatively shallow bit of water. So together these two basins make Windermere the largest natural lake in England.
And the North and South Basin are rather different as far as the populations of char are concerned as well.
They are. They've changed quite a lot depending on the environmental conditions, because of course the fish are free to move between the two basins. And the South Basin of Windermere is the one that's suffered more from impacts, particularly from eutrophication, from too many nutrients coming into the lake due to man's activities. And we have evidence that when things get particularly bad, the Arctic char will come out of the South Basin and come up into the North Basin, and then move back when conditions are a bit better.
There used to be 15 named species of Arctic char.
You've been doing your homework.
Now there's only one. So what happened to the other 14?
It was really a taxonomic reclassification. So we haven't lost any species or anything like that. All the fish that we call Arctic char now are known to science as Salvelinus alpinus, which is sort of means the little mountain salmon. But these different populations do vary a little bit. So a lot of fish biologists today will look at the Arctic char as a kind of species complex. Having said that, just a few years ago, there was a review of the taxonomy of European freshwater fishes, and in that, the authors have actually split the Arctic char back up into different species again.
Yeah. Now, Arctic char suggests it's a cold water species, a species
exactly.
That lives in the Arctic. So what's it doing here?
And I think you could really think of it as a sort of pioneering fish species. If we go back for this part of the world 10,000 years to the last ice age, as the ice was retreating and fresh waters came into existence in what was to become the British Isles, the Arctic char and its close relative the brown trout were some of the first species to arrive and colonise those areas. We're towards the southern limit of its geographical distribution. The Arctic char is really a fish of the northern latitudes of the world and can be found all the way around northern Europe through Scandinavia. You'll find Arctic char right through Russia and a few populations in Alaska, to Iceland, Greenland. The Arctic char is in all of these countries. And so the distribution of the char is partly reflects what it absolutely needs in terms of temperature and oxygen requirements, and partly how it gets on with other fish species, which is not terrifically well in terms of competition.
A species confined to freshwater?
In the UK, in the British Isles, yes. But if you go a little bit further north into northern Norway, into parts of Finland and across into Canada, the Arctic char will go to sea, much like a sea trout, but only for a few months during the winter.
The Arctic char is no longer migratory, but used to be in the past?
We don't actually know what it did when it first reached these shores in terms of how frequently it would move between the two, but it certainly probably arrived via salt water. Today, I mean, the Arctic char in Windermere, if they wanted to, they could get into Morecambe Bay and into the Irish Sea, because the salmon and the sea trout here do that. There's nothing to physically stop them, but they don't do it for other reasons, which are probably more to do with the most appropriate strategy for this kind of area.
Nevertheless, some populations of Arctic char are landlocked. They live in lakes where there's no access to water.
Yes, yeah, that's true, yeah.
The history of research on the Arctic char here on the Windermere is quite long. I mean, I read in one of the papers that they've been catching Arctic char and therefore having some sort of input to research since 1939.
That's right. Yeah. Even maybe a bit earlier in the 1930s, the research on the lake here really started by a body called the Freshwater Biological Association. And they ran a research program for many years, actively right up into the 1990s, when a lot of the work was taken over by our organisation, because we're now the Centre for Ecology and Hydrology. So there's been all sorts of studies on the lake. It's without doubt the best studied lake in England. My personal research is more to do with fish populations, what controls how many fish we have in a lake, what kind of fish, and so on. And in order to do that, you need quite long-term time scales, because the generation time of an Arctic char is typically something like 5 or 6 years or so. So to follow a few generations, you're talking about the best part of someone's working lifetime. And there are very few places in the world where these kind of long-term studies are continued. And with fish, most of those places tend to be places with fisheries. And then you've got the added complication of people taking out huge numbers of fish each year. So you're not studying a really natural population. In Windermere, there are no significant removal of fish by fisheries. So we're effectively studying an Arctic char population which is responding to its environment. So our real aim is looking at the long-term dynamics of populations. And of course, in recent years, this has become a big issue because of things like climate change in particular. And when you're dealing with a fish, the Arctic char, you're at the southern limits of distribution, you would expect to see some kind of impacts from temperature changes.
We're just about to reach our first point of stopping, I think.
Yeah.
Boat hook just been used to grab hold of the line to which is attached a buoy on the end of the net. And the net's just going to be hauled in over the gunwales of the boat. This net lifted every day?
Yeah, usually these nets, they're put in overnight.
Yeah.
And they just essentially act as a trap.
Yeah.
So the fish entangle themselves. So it depends on the fish moving into the nets. And the nets are also selected for the size of fish they catch. So this mesh size in here is about 32 millimetres. We'll catch Arctic char of about a foot long, that kind of size. And so that's appropriate to the kind of maximum size of Arctic char that we see in Windermere, because they don't get too big. We do sampling over 6 weeks, because one individual netting doesn't tell you a great deal. The strength of the sampling comes in from repeating things.
There.
Oh, we have a char.
Oh, we have a char! Let me just explain, the net's being hauled in over the gunwales, and as the fish that were, it's a gill net of sorts, as the fish come in, they're put into a big plastic tub of water on the inside. The net is now in. We have three fish. One of them, I am delighted to say, is an Arctic char. Right, them slapping in the bay. So they're going to be...
I think it's fair to say that's a fairly typical catch of recent years. If we'd been here 20, 30 years ago, we would probably had 10, 20 Arctic char.
Now it's the stage where the fish are going to be processed. Can we just look into the... But they are beautiful, beautiful fish. Now this is going to be my very first Arctic char.
Congratulations.
So I am quite excited. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. It has reminiscent spots of the brown trout down its side, but they're not coloured like the brown trout. Fine, beautiful, torpedo-like fish. Really good. You can see it's a trout, sort.
Yes,
can't
and you see the small adipose fin on the back as well.
The adipose fin is the one, the smaller fin, just in front of the tail. He's a male or...
He's not in brilliant fettle, really.
No, right. A fish of 10, 11 inches.
I'll measure it now.
A male of what sort of age?
Probably the age of 5 or 6 years, I would guess.
Right.
We do see them up to sort of 10, 11 years of age.
Yeah. Right, we've got our char, it has to be processed. Take us through what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, Ben, we'll just measure the length of these fish, just identify the sex of the thing, and that's it with these fish. These fish will then be going back alive into the water.
Right. That's how our char has come out.
30.1, I would say.
30.1. Average for a fish?
I'd say it's quite a big fish, actually.
Right. Although you say it's not looking very well. Only you would know.
Well, it's just its breeding colours aren't particularly bright. I mean, it just looks a bit dull. I mean, it looks healthy enough, you know. It's male running, Jan.
Yeah. Now, we've caught our fish. We've measured our fish. It's going to go back in the lovely cold waters of Lake Windermere. What has it told us?
It contributes to the long-term monitoring of the population. So this process is carried on a number of times over this six-week period when the fish are spawning. And so we can put those data together and then compare them with the previous year and the year before that and the year before that. And the strength of this monitoring program is the fact that this has been happening this time every year since the late 1930s. So it puts us into a very long-term time perspective, which is exactly what we want anyway for looking at fish population dynamics, and it's also especially what we want when we're looking at potential effects of climate change.
Surely.
Because Windermere has warmed up. The wind's getting up a bit now.
Yeah, it's cooling down a bit.
But Windermere has warmed up a little bit in recent decades.
What's a little bit?
The annual average temperature is up by the order of a degree, one degree Celsius.
Right.
Which doesn't sound a great deal, but biologically that is a great deal.
And but if you're an Arctic fish who spends its life searching for cold water, it's a problem.
It is, yeah. And the big concern is that this temperature increase may affect different kinds of organisms to different extents. The Arctic char eggs, which are being produced below us now and laid on the bottom, the date at which they will hatch depends on how the temperature goes over the next few months.
Yeah.
And the same is true in terms of the plankton and its dynamics. It's also influenced by temperature. Now, if they're influenced in different ways, the concern is that the Arctic char eggs may be hatching out at a time which is inappropriate for them to find food.
But we've already explained that Windermere is a large lake. It has a variety of depths. I mean, can't female char alter the position in which they spawn? They make their reds to take account for the fact that the temperature is changing?
They could do if they knew what was happening. They had a means of being aware of that is happening. I mean, if there happen to be some members of the autumn spawning population which tend to spawn a little bit deeper, then they would be selected for in over successive years. Mm. And that kind of thing, you know, that's natural selection in action. It's evolution in action. The concern is that things are just happening so quickly so that we've seen this fairly significant change in temperature just within one or two generations of the Arctic char.
Right, well, it's time for our fish to go back. It's done its bit on today's Living World. What's the plan from now on, Ian?
Well, now we're going to replace the net with another one, which will then be lifted again in the future by Janice and Ben. And this process will carry on for another few weeks till we've covered the spawning season of the char. This is the only time when they come into this relatively shallow water. So we'll put that net in, and then we'll head up the lake, up to the deepest point of the lake, and then we'll take some measurements of the temperature and oxygen concentration in the water, and take some samples of water for chemical analysis of the nutrients. So that, again, is part of a long-term monitoring of the lake and looking at how things have changed in terms of temperature and oxygen and the nutrients which fuel the food chain of the lake. Okay, we're going.
Okay,
so the net's now going back into the water. A weight and a marker buoy have just gone overboard, and now they will reverse the boat and the net will pay off over the side of the boat back into the water.
We're going to stop now and motor on up to Windermere, to a place where we're going to take the water samples, the deepest part of the lake, probably the coldest part of the lake as well. Taken a couple of tries to hook ourselves up to the buoy for our last spot here on the deepest part of Windermere. How deep are we talking about, Ian?
It's about 64 metres when the lake is full. Right. So
now, you were talking about the lake warming. Presumably, it only warms on the top and not the deeper part.
In a typical summer, the surface water may be 20 degrees, a bit higher than that. I think the record is about 24 degrees Celsius.
But that was
exceptional. That was probably for a few hours.
But it's always cold at the bottom?
Always colder at the bottom. And during the summer, the lake stratifies, so the surface temperature can be 20 degrees or higher than that, and the bottom may only be 7 or 8 or 10 degrees.
Yeah.
So it's just because of the physics of the water. So essentially, because the lake's only been heated from the top layers heat up a lot faster than the bottom. And then eventually you get a density difference between the surface and the lower water. Yeah. So the lake also almost becomes sort of two lakes, one sat on top of the other.
Oh, right.
And there's relatively little mixing between those two lakes.
Yeah.
So all the sunshine, most of the nutrients are up in the surface water. So that's where most of the biological production of the lake happens during the summertime. And down in the lower lake, there's no primary production. There's nothing is producing food by photosynthesis because there's no light. But typically there's cool temperatures, and there's usually a lot of oxygen down there still, and that's where the Arctic char likes to spend the summer months.
Right, whilst we're talking, Janice is gently lowering something down into the base of the lake. What are you doing, Janice?
I'm doing a zooplankton net. We drop it down to 40 metres, then raise it up and collect all the zooplankton in its path.
Yes, at this time of year, the lake has been mixed up by the arrival of autumn, so there'll be little temperature difference from the surface down to the bottom. But these temperatures still are changing because the lake is definitely getting warmer. So Windermere these days is on average about a degree warmer than it was in the 1980s, 1970s. It's certainly an issue of concern. At the moment, the Arctic char can still stay deep enough to escape these very warm temperatures during the summer even, at least in the north part of the lake where there's good oxygen at the bottom. In the south basin of the lake, sometimes there are occasions where there's not much oxygen at depth, and then the char is getting sandwiched between these two areas of not enough oxygen in the deep part of the lake getting too warm in the surface of the lake. The good thing for them in Windermere is that they have the option of moving up into the north basin, where conditions are much better.
But it's one thing knowing how the environment is changing and what effect it's having on the things that live here in Windermere, but when it comes to what do you do about it, what do you do about it?
If we go back a few decades, the work that was done on Windermere was crucial in terms of identifying phosphorus as usually the key limiting nutrient for most algal growth. On Windermere, a large part of the phosphorus coming into the lake comes from sewage discharges. If you go back decades and decades, there was little treatment of the sewage coming into the Windermere.
Right, our plankton net is now back on board. It has a little funnel with a tap, like a gas tap, on the bottom. And that's been opened and fed into a bowl. So right, can we have a look?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
So this was a zooplankton net, so it has a very fine mesh which will retain even the smallest of animals. And you can see in our sample bottle now we have large numbers of water fleas, of Daphnia and their relatives. These beasts are really the first things that eat the algae.
Yeah.
The great graze on the algae. And right, then fish in turn will feed on these.
Right. Now, if increasing nutrients, particularly phosphorus, is a problem, presumably it provides more algae for things like the water fleas to feed on, which provide more water fleas, big fat water fleas, for your trout and your char to feed on.
It depends where you are along that scale. If you're in a very nutrient poor system and you add fertiliser, essentially, then you'll increase the algae, you'll increase the zooplankton, you'll increase the fish. And the Canadians have done experiments, including with char lakes, where they've done just that and shown they can control the production of fish by adding nutrients like that. But if you keep on doing that, you then start to change the algal community, and you can have algal species growing which are not particularly edible to the zooplankton. Uh-huh. And under extreme conditions, you can end up with systems where the algae produced are these cyanobacteria, these blue-green algae,
right,
which are, everyone knows, causes real
toxic,
real problems,
toxic
and inedible to a large number of zooplankton. And then the food chain sort of breaks down at that point. Right. With more nutrients, you typically end up with a lake's fish community changing from one dominated by salmonids, uh-huh, by salmon and trout and char and so on, to one dominated by roach and its relatives, the cyprinids or the carps. And there are many examples of that on mainland Europe.
Yeah. What we haven't seen is that with trend in temperatures in a couple of hours we've been out here.
I am now
absolutely frozen solid. You can see the colour of Ian's nose. You know he's frozen solid. Well, I'm glad to say, I'm not glad to say it's the end of the programme. I've had a lovely morning here on Lake Windermere, but it is time to get back to the warmth of your centre down at the sake of the lake. So, Captain, please, let's go home.
If you've enjoyed this programme, you might like to try other Radio 4 podcasts, from Friday Night Comedy and Daily Drama from the Archers to a range of news, discussions and documentaries. For a full list of available podcasts, visit bbc.co.uk/radio4.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.